Just to very first start off, what is caring for the Kenai? It's basically it's around a very central, if sort of broad question, right?
Yes, it's curriculum now on our Kenai Peninsula School District, and the prompt is, what can I do, invent, create, or improve to better care for the environment or prepare the community for a natural disaster? And the kids are assigned this. It meets state and national standards, so it's replacement curriculum. It's not supplemental curriculum or extra curricular. They actually do a research paper, and what they are learning and how language arts has crossed over into science in this assignment has really been great.
So let's get back. I want to start sort of at the beginning. We're this is the 29th Caring for the Kenai this year, correct?
That's it.
29th. So let's go back to the beginning. And you said that this was an idea that came sort of from someplace else. You borrowed some things, but what was sort of the genesis? How did this get off the ground that first year?
Well, probably in 1995, when Good Morning America was here, we were interviewed by Charlie Gibson, and he asked some questions that got my mind kind of responding, and I guess what I did was reflect back to when I was in seventh or eighth grade, and John F. Kennedy gave that State of the Union speech: "Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country." And as a young kid going into the 60s, that impressed me. Oh, I'm supposed to do something for America. My father was a World War II command pilot. You know, he went to war, sacrificed, you know, himself for this country. And I guess when I got in the spot where I needed an idea, the idea was to start asking young people, what can I do? As I became a parent, I realized I didn't really have much to offer my kids as far as telling them how they should live. I was still trying to figure it out. And I realized that as a parent, I could learn a lot by listening to my kids. And that was sort of my little model for parenting. And I guess those things kind of combined so that when I was trying to pitch a program that I'd been asked to create called Waste Busters. And at that time, we had the volcano erupting, Shailen, and we had an oil and gas industry here. And we then also had a commercial fishing industry here. And no one really understood one or the other. We also had a lot of money coming in. The school district was flush with money. When my kids would go to extracurricular activities or sporting activities and they would pull into the McDonald's or the fast food place, they handed out cash for the kids to buy their lunches. There was no fees for additional things.
Boy, was that a different time.
It was. It was. And probably will never come again. But nevertheless, the idea of there being a community partnership in the educational process of our school district wasn't there yet. And my business partner for over 30 years, Leonore and Dr. Frazier, their boys were in the school system here and they were in AP classes. And when I was laboring on this, how do we get the information that as an environmentalist out of the 60s, you know, coming here from Michigan and California, what I found here is that the people who were really active in the science of environmental improvement worked for the energy industries. They were developing the new technologies. They had the labs. They were doing the water testing. They were doing the ambient air quality particulates and discovering ways that they could clean all of that. And so I kind of, you know, morphed into that because I think we need ideas to solve things, not government to be out there telling people that you must do this without saying, how do you do it?
So in the beginning, was it the same central basic question or kind of prompt at the beginning and dealing with environmental concerns in the beginning?
No, here's what happened. I was pitching Waste Busters, which was a program that, utilizing some media would show how environmentally careful the industry really was. They had recycling on the platform and just to let the community know.
This is very soon around Exxon Valdez and all this. Is this before, mm-hmm. after? It's right in that neighborhood.
Right in that,
yeah,
same area.
Yeah.
Right. And everybody was panicking and you know, let's shut down the industry and those type of things. And this I use when I'm working with my finalists, because this is exactly what happened. I read a board of directors or an audience or somebody, you know, you learn how to do that in my business. And I was losing these guys. I thought it was one of my best pieces of work that I'd accomplished, and they were bored and thinking about their jobs and things. So earlier when I was working on this program to really make it good, Leonor had said, you know what we need is something in the schools, because my kids have no understanding of what it takes to develop a barrel of oil or how the regulations work. And because of what I cited earlier, the separation between educators and industry was so wide. I said, yeah, good luck with that. You know, that's not going to happen. So I'm presenting Wastebusters and I'm losing them. And I said, or we could go to the schools and we could ask kids what they can do. And by having to answer the prompt, what can I do, invent, create, they would see what other people are doing. And it's the subject that maybe we were talking about earlier that they now are calling social nesting, where one idea builds on another. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, the guys perked up, you know, and Steve Weiss, who was the head of Unocal Oil and Gas at the time, said, yeah, let's do that. And that was the end of the meeting. And I, well, here's what I said. Okay, we can ask kids what they can do, and we'll call it Keeping the Kenai Clean, and we'll spell clean with a K. Then we have the acronym KKK.
Right.
That's exactly the remark.
Right.
That's exactly the response that I wanted. And they said, okay, you know, maybe not the KKK. And it became Caring for the Kenai, which in truth, the oil and gas industry really does care for the environment of the Kenai Peninsula.
And in trying to recruit some support from the industry, bringing that component of getting students involved was really kind of a big hook for that.
Right. And I'm not an educator. I'd never done this before. It came off the top of my head. So I then had the pressure of, you know, I like working here. I like being on the Kenai Peninsula. And at that time, I was traveling to a lot of different states outside doing the work I was doing. And so I went to the school district. I talked to the superintendent at that time, who then lateraled it off to Paul Epperson, who is in charge of curriculum. And he said, Merrill, that's, you know what we need? I said, do we want to do an assembly? How can we make this happen? It was supposed to be just for 1 year. We're going to do it just one time for Unocal Oil and Gas to get their message out. And Paul said, you know, we do a great job preparing our kids for academic achievement and going on to college, but we have very little experience for them to know about the real world. And in the real world, Shailen, after you get your degree in whatever career you're pursuing, it all comes down to an interview or an oral presentation. Are you going to fit better than these other applicants that I have with my team? You've already done your testing. You've already done your scores. You've got your information. And yet the schools had no experience for those kids. And it was sort of like, okay, jump in the pool and swim. So Paul really helped us with this whole idea of not only the prompt, having the kids write an essay, but then that they would have to present. Okay, this is not an academic contest. It's an idea contest. You have to get up in front of a panel of judges, just like I was in front of that board of directors for Unocal, and present your idea. And it's got to be presented so that they choose you over, you know, the other 12.
And this is in a time before, you know, we talk now a lot about the idea of science communication and how to convey complex topics and complex ideas to, you know, a lay public that aren't specialists, that don't have advanced degrees in this stuff. But science communication is sort of at the heart of caring for the Kenai.
Exactly. And when these kids are presenting, they're not presenting to professors. I mean, maybe one's a professor, but it's a broad-based community panel, including one of their peers. The winner from last year is there. And to communicate to them, that presentation is what is the challenge. And it's like I tell each of the finalists, I don't care where you place, making it into the top 12 and giving a presentation, an oral presentation in front of this broad-based panel of judges will be an experience you'll never forget. And it'll be with you when you forget how to do the algebraic algorithm, the fact that you had the confidence to stand up and say, I made a rake with a magnet on it, or I made a coloring book, will stick with you when you're in that interview, whether you're going to be a biologist or whatever you want as a career.
And so in talking about how this thing has developed over the years, you know, it began as part of the curriculum and you're talking about finalists. Maybe you could talk about sort of the structure of how this works. It begins in the classroom sort of as an assignment that everyone has to do. But for the kids who are really interested in it and really into it, they can maybe go a little bit above and beyond and really develop those ideas. And so tell us about, you know, getting to this spot where we have 12 finalists and that.
Yeah, well, lo be it for, you know, me to have developed a curriculum. We came up with the idea, and Paul gave us the thing of making it a real-world experience. Well, that was up my alley because I've lived my whole life pretty much in the real world. So we put it out there to the schools with the original prompt, and at that time it wasn't curriculum, but Rick Frederick out in Kiski High School said, hey, this is not only a good idea, you're all going to do it. So he assigned it, okay, and they did it, and we had the first year 101 entries. Well, my sponsors saw that response, and, you know, the CEO down in Los Angeles of Unical saw the results of that, and they said, this is really cool. Maria Coles was the winner that very first year, a young lady who had had a difficult life and had been put in foster care, but she saw our video that we made for the classrooms, and she said, I can do that. And her first idea was to take non-recyclable magazines and put a polymer with it and make it into a construction material. She won the contest, and then she went on to become homecoming queen. She went on to win a scholarship to UAA, and now she's a mother with I don't know how many kids, but, you know, with an advanced degree, because that thing in her mind clicked, I can do that. I have an idea. This is, you know, and then everything builds on that. So it was Rick Frederick who I called the godfather of the contest, because if a teacher hadn't taken the initiative to assign it, we wouldn't be here 29 years later.
And because it really expands the pool of ideas, and when you get kids involved in the classroom, then it can lead to discussions in the classroom and just more an opportunity for ideas to bounce back and forth and that sort of thing.
Right, and kids, they're trained to do their homework. I don't care how much money we put out there as a prize. No, I don't think so. I'd rather go play soccer or something else. But if I've got to turn this in, that's where the teachers become our critical component of this. Because when it's their homework and they're going to get a grade, now they got to go home and say, Dad, Mom, Uncle Harry, I got to come up with an idea. What in the world can I do? One of my wonderful examples is Allie Ostrander, who now is a household word, and everybody knows the famous Allie Ostrander.
Sure.
When she was a freshman, though, in Christine Davis's class over at Kenai Central High School, she got the carry for the Kenai assignment and went up to her teacher and said, you know, this isn't real. I don't have any idea what I can do. And Kristen said, well, Allie, what do you like to do? I like to run. Okay, is there some way that you can take what you like to do and have an environmental impact with it? Then came the Salmon Run series, and a freshman who implemented that made the race, and I don't know, it's 6 or 7 years later now, but Shaylin, I think the last figure I heard was over $60,000, maybe $65,000 has been raised to eradicate invasive plant species. Money not from the government, money from a high school freshman who loves to run, who had an idea, and then followed through with it.
And that points to, you mentioned the very first winner was a very, a recycling program was the first prize winner for caring for the Kenai. And that was had very much to do with you saying polymers and recycling and very scientific. But it's moved away from, not necessarily away from that, but it's grown beyond just basic environmental questions and some of these really technical science questions into more of a social, kind of a cultural component, too. That seems to have grown into some of the winning strategies, perhaps, over the years.
Well, we keep coming back to the prompt, what can I do? And as we were talking about earlier, wouldn't it be nice if everybody was thinking, what can I do to balance the budget or to build a field house? What can I do? Not what can government do for me, but what can I do? And that starts thinking and it starts a conversation that then, again, going back to this new term called social nesting, where we are unique in this. We're not unique in many other things from the animal kingdom, but in the ability to take a thought and build on it, work with somebody else, an aunt, an uncle, the borough mayor. And many of our ideas have come from those political people to the kids and have then turned into legislation. Freya Che was one of our winners who went down to Juneau. And Governor Parnell, when he came to our banquet, made the statement that I have to be the only governor in the history of the United States of America who has ever been lobbied by a high school freshman to sign a piece of legislation that she had introduced. And he did.
So it even gets into the political realm.
Absolutely. It gets into anything that has to do with life. And now a lot of ideas this year are dealing with natural disaster because we just had an earthquake.
And that's a relatively new addition to that prompt. That's kind of an add-on that's happened relatively soon. Is figuring out how to be best prepared for those things. And we see more of an emphasis on that all the time.
Well, that happened when FEMA came here and did the FireWise, and they spent a lot of money to network our community so that we would have this wonderful response team that we have at OEM. And Doug Newbold, Denise Newbold, worked at Agrium, our sponsor at that time. He said, you know, the thing about this that's kind of disheartening is it's going to go away. People are going to forget about it, that it's even here. However, if we were to have that included in your prompt every year, kids, teachers would have to think about volcanoes, earthquakes. We live in a very natural disaster prone area. And if kids keep thinking and go out research, then they're going to find out, oh, OEM has this system of FireWise and it's connected. And, you know, if I, what I could do is make a packet here and give it to my neighbors. And we have a lot of those ideas now that are coming forward to teach the younger generation, kids teaching kids, and then in retrospect, teaching their parents as well. So it's broadened. And again, I'll go back to the thing. It wasn't my idea, but I listen, you know, and then I'm one of these social nesters who say, that's really great. Let's incorporate it here. Let's make this part of the real world experience. Would you like to volunteer? We'll have over 60 volunteers in this year's program, all excited. And my favorite day of the year was last Wednesday, when we select our top 12.
Right. Let's talk about that. What I'm curious, over the years, have you been able to pick out sort of what the components are of a finalist caliber idea?
No. And that's why I get excited every time I watch them pick the top 12. And I never have anything to do with the judging. Because we thought in the beginning, and as a matter of fact, one of UNICAL's executives said, how many ideas could there possibly be? You're going to run out of steam here. Well, 29 years later, and Shailen, did you know that a bat is a pollinator?
I did not know that.
Okay. Would you be interested in learning what a pollinator packet is?
Sure.
That a high school kid has created and invented? And then you'd have to come to the oral presentations in April, because this is going to knock your socks off. And something that none of us have heard in 29 years yet. And we have you know, people from the college. We have former educators. We have, when we select the 12, they all come in there. And in 29 years, I have never had any of these professional people walk out of that room saying, that was a waste of time. These kids, what's the matter with these young kids? Without exception, they walk out saying, my goodness, these teachers and these kids, this is amazing. Comment overheard, this is not high school work. This is college level essay writing. Are you sure this isn't a plagiarism? And I said, well, the way we protect about that is we hire your professor to do the language arts scoring, you know, from your college. And he says, then obviously it's damn good work.
You know, I want to see, you've got your list there. I wanted to talk about maybe if you could pick out some other past winners and what some of those ideas were, because I'm trying to see if there's been any sort of, or try to figure out sort of what the evolution has been and how these ideas are developed. You know, what role technology plays, what role our broader understanding of environmental concerns play. I'm trying to get my head around that a little bit.
Well, if it was consistent, you know, I could probably answer the question. But we can go back to 2001 when Reuben Floyd had an environmental coloring book. Caitlin Vadla, who now is another household word here on the peninsula after coming home, she created a website for waterfront property owners that's still utilized over at the Watershed Forum. Christine Frederick, who came up with an idea to use an alternate energy lab utilizing the shut-in platforms to do this kind of testing. So you start seeing the variety that goes all over. We had, I'll find her name, Hannah Watkins, who published four books, actually, from the time she was a freshman to the time she graduated, all on disaster preparedness. I think it was called, like, Mike and the Volcano. And after she, you know, won the contest, she went out and we got sponsors. We published the book, and it's distributed in his most elementary schools across the country. She ended up going on winning a full ride to the University of New York, not just tuition, but all expenses paid. So basically a $300,000 to $400,000 education because of her one idea. I can color and I can make this book for kids.
Pretty simple.
Right. So again, trying to get back to your question, and as I said, I do digress, quite often.
That's what this show's about.
Yeah, I can't think that there's ever been any two ideas that are alike. And of course, we deal with 12 every year, mm-hmm. and likewise in those 12 finalists, you'll find ideas that are not duplicate. And this year we have finalists from Rezdalna, small villages, all the way over to Seward. And these ideas will absolutely knock your socks off. I know I say that every year, but it's true, because every year I'm amazed at the uniqueness, the creativity, and the partnership that the community has with working with these kids and their ideas.
How practical does an idea need to be one of those, finalist ideas or even a winner? Because some of these are far more practical than others. And I'm thinking specifically of last year, perhaps the year before, the beach magnets on the Kenai Beach. And I mean, just an incredibly basic, simple, practical idea.
Right. He made a little model. He was out raking with his friend, camping with his friends on the beach, and they found 27, and I'll never forget the number because he was always so specific. It wasn't 28 or almost 30 or 27 metal stakes that they found in just a half an hour raking the beach. So he created a rake with a magnet on it. And then, now, he was in last year's contest, and he took sixth place. And then afterward, he went to the city council. And he had researched and found out that there was a commercial-grade power magnet that could be attached to the back of the rake that the city uses. Well, it was like $2,500, and he came to the Caring for the Kenai for a grant that NSTAR provides to buy this magnet. The city chipped in $500, and that was in April. They designed and figured out how to mount this, with the kid and Parks and Rec, and by the end of July... This may not be quite a precise figure, but it's pretty close. 1,837 some pounds of metal, nails, tent stakes were raked from the beach. And even the mayor, Brian Gabriel, had stepped on one of those nails and had to have, the tetanus shots and the $2,000 worth of medical aid because he was walking barefoot on our beaches.
I was going to say, and saved how many thousands of dollars worth of tires down there?
Exactly. But the kid thought of it. And that's where, again, in listening and then as the community does this overall working together, we come up with a higher quality of life. That's what it's all about.
Riley Graves, we should mention, the originator of that idea.
Absolutely. He owns it.
Students from all across the Kenai Peninsula borough get into this. How have the numbers grown over the years? You mentioned about 100 kids that first year, maybe. Was that right?
That first year, and then it grew. And we got our average up to around 500. And then the advent of all this technology, and of course our school population has also reduced, but now we average right around 400 entries, from which we glean our top 12. And then out of the top 100 entries that are selected, there's student recognition awards, where other companies can give a kid the recognition because the idea works with them and what they're interested in, whether it's recycling or whatever it is. So we've broadened it so that more kids get recognition and thereby get encouraged to do what Riley did and follow through with his rake, or what Freya did by getting the legislation passed, or what Jenna Hansen did with her sea glass. Now it's a business on the North Road. They make out of, rather than taking your glass to the dumps, they polish it and make beautiful jewelry. Actually, she's going to be making the centerpieces for the awards banquet this year.
Oh, wow. How about that?
Yeah. Well, let's go back to the first year. Again, she wasn't a winner, but Ridgeway Farms, that everybody's familiar with, was a polyculture idea that Abby's daughter came up with. And after the contest, they're kind of disappointed that they only took second or third place. But they said, we've done so much work on this. Why don't we do it? And they applied for a grant from the Alaska Science Technology Foundation. I think it was something like $78,000. They built it. And today, it's providing local fruits and vegetables for people right here on the Kenai Peninsula as this whole agricultural movement starts to grow.
Mm-hmm. Because this is a big part of applying for a Caring for the Kenai grant. I'm looking at it right now. And it's, how do you get the rest of the community involved? What are the long-term implications? What are the long-term costs? Those are all things that imply that these are ideas that should be thought of as sort of long-term rather than just, you know, kind of flash in the pan things.
Absolutely. And the other thing that has really impressed me about the program is that it involves the generations. Let's go back to Captain Conservation, which I think was 3 years ago.
That's right.
The puppet. And maybe you were at the chamber meeting where on stage you had the child, okay, you had the mom, you had the father doing the voiceover, and you had the grandmother all on stage, three generations working together, not, oh, grandma, that's so out of it, or that's so not cool. Everything was cool, and they did it together. Since we have lost our agricultural rural roots where everybody has value in the family, and now all this technology that has come along, we need things where we can see the value of grandma, mom, and dad, and the benefit coming to the kid. They're helping me win this money. Isn't that cool?
And where does that money come from? We haven't really talked too much about some of the partners in the Caring for the Kenai Project. How have those evolved and changed over the years?
Well, we started with Unocal Oil and Gas. It was separate, and not many people knew then, or you know, but it's like an Oldsmobile and a Buick. A Unocal chemical plant that bought the Colliers plant was a whole different corporation.
Right.
Okay, different board of directors, different. And they took most of the heat for, well, the trees that got killed when there was an emission of ammonia and it got over-fertilized. And the oil and gas division, which developed most of the inlet back in the day, mm-hmm. Was separate from that. And they wanted something that would separate their image from the chemical plant. That never happened because Unocal was Unocal and everybody associated it.
There's only so much public relations can do, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. So the second year when we went back for another budget, they said, let's partner and let's just be Unocal, which we did. And year after year, even though with oil production going down and a lot of budget cuts, they funded this program until it became Agrium. And then Chevron became a partner with Agrium when Unocal sold out. And then after Agrium left, Tesoro then became Endeavor, and now is Marathon Petroleum, called us. Okay, and they say, we've seen this over the years. We want to be part of this. And we brought them in as one of the signature partners with Chevron. And then after Chevron left, Marathon Petroleum and Endeavor have been our major signature sponsor that takes the major cost of the budget. And this is not a cheap program. it does take cost. And then we started bringing in what we call community partners, where like Sweeney's Clothing and Hillcorp and Alaska Peninsula Radiation Oncology chip in $5,000 that then is allocated to the classrooms to buy STEM education material. And the neat thing about that, again, we changed from having more money than we knew how to spend to the teachers couldn't even buy beakers for their science classrooms.
Right.
These are all whatever the science teacher and the student decide they want to buy for the classroom. It's a collaborative thing. So the student comes away not only, you know, having one with their idea, but this now maybe $5,000 or $6,000 that their classroom is going to be able to spend. You know, a state championship trophy is a nice thing, but our kids come back in that smart board that the next class is learning from. Oh, that was my Caring for the Kenai presentation.
So was that the goal from the beginning, was to develop these industry partnerships as a way for industry to kind of pitch back into the community a little bit?
I guess that was one of our original goals. But this has been done so voluntarily. And I've had my socks blown off so many times when I want to give recognition more to them and say, no, it's not about that. It's about the kids. And, oh, our foreman's kid is one of, you know, entered it. And, oh, we've had managers out there at the refinery, James Tangaro. Oh, no, Steve Hansen's son, who made it into the finals. Well, he couldn't be a judge that year, but he saw it from the inside of the family, what it did to his family. And they have been just such great partners. And people like the Kenai River Raven, Dick Erkenef, who came to Alaska, moved here after fishing with Senator Ted Stevens in the Classic. He's you know, he puts, you know, $5,000 every year behind the program just because he believes that it's teaching leadership in a way that we really need it to be taught.
You mentioned how this program has become part of a curriculum and more over the years has reached into the classroom. Maybe we could expand on that a little bit. You mentioned, you know, whiteboards or something, but that's an important, I don't want to call it a source of revenue for teachers, but that's an interesting little bump that some teachers might be able to get through this program. How has that changed over the years?
Well, again, from, you know, not being allowed to bring any, you know, money in or prizes into the classroom to now, we have put, okay, after this year, it'll be like $280,000.
Is that right?
Into science classrooms of various schools from Port Graham to Vasinsenka, you know, to the major schools here as well. But that's allocated according to the way they place in the finals. And yes, it has become not only positive for the partnership of the community. And the other aspect that the program involves is we have our volunteers who read the essays before they are finalized, make comments. And I think you're nodding your head. You probably are one of those volunteers that have read some of those essays. And now that we are all electronic and we have all this instantaneous information, they get those comments before they finish their idea, can change their idea before they submit it. But what that has accomplished is the community seeing the terrific ideas our kids have, and that those ideas are being mentored by teachers who are not just sages on the stage collecting the homework and test scores, but are working with our kids so that they become productive citizens, not just test scorers, but come back to the community and become our city managers, our doctors, our dentists, national award-winning dentists, okay, right here from the Kenai Peninsula. So when I hear that our educational system is failing, I get a little angry, Shailen, because it's not true. It's just coming from somebody who hasn't been up close and seen what's happening in the classroom. And we all should. We invest in our educational system. Tax dollars are an investment. It is not a gun at our head, somebody threatening to take our home if we don't pay up, okay? It's what we are investing in our community so that the next generation will have the kids thinking and working collaboratively with this social nesting project that improves our quality of life. That's worth investing. That's the dividend. And to think that you get a dividend without investing something is faulty. It is not a permanent fund dividend because you don't invest in it. If I could put money into Alaska's permanent fund, I would expect a dividend. But when I put money into a mutual fund, I only get a dividend because I have invested, not because I breathe and pee on the Kenai Peninsula. Do I deserve government to send me money? We are the government. These are our kids. This is our community.
I wonder when we would, if we might float into the PFD discussion over the course.
I told
of this.
You I digress.
but you know what?
The program involves all of that.
Well, I was
teachers,
gonna say,
community, families, understanding, and then the kids understand. This is why I go to school. Not that I have to, or they're going to throw me in the slammer. You know, I'm going to school to learn so that I can become a puppeteer or so that I can become a dancer or write music.
Right. And it speaks to how connected so many of these things are and how, you know, kind of the basis for a lot of things in a community. And when you're talking about developing a community, how important to that base a strong educational system can be.
Absolutely. And I challenge everybody to get involved. And some of probably the most ardent critics of our community have some great ideas. Not going to mention any names, but there's a worm farmer out there that wants that should be working with our kid on composting in the finals this year because it's a tremendous idea.
I'm glad you brought that up. My thought is that going back over the years that a lot of these ideas probably had some focus on the marine world in some sense, but is that growing now to include more agricultural things or more recycling or more energy things? How are the broad shifts in ideas changing or are they changing? Is it just kind of growing outward in all directions all the time?
It's amazing. And yes, outward in all directions at the time. We were interviewed by, I'm going to forget her name. She had a talk show on Anchorage Television, and we went up there to be on the talk show. You may think of it. She's long since passed away. But it was in one of the first years, and she asked the question of our environmental specialist from UNICAL, what's recycling? Okay. 30 years ago,
that's really interesting.
The word wasn't even coined, you know, and now, you know, it's a common thing. So we went from a lot of recycling ideas in the beginning because we didn't have the landfill facilities back then. We had volunteers in Regroup that collected these things.
Right.
So it has broadened from that to technological apps that will give you fish identification that a high school freshman, you know, worked on. And it seems to, plastic bag. Did you know that there's a worm that'll eat a plastic bag and turn it into compost?
We could use more of those, sure.
Sure. So every year something new happens, and the kids come up with ideas that I don't think we're ever going to hear it all, because they don't know that they can't do it. And what one of our judges was with ADEC said she loved the program because she's a regulator, okay? And she is used to telling people why that can't happen. You can't do that because blah, blah, blah. No one's told these kids that it can't be done. And so the kid may ask, well, why can't it be? Well, there's a law that prevents it. Well, can we change the law? Yes, you can. You know, you are the government.
Right.
And the kid still has that fresh, unfettered ability to say, let's make this happen.
Youthful indiscretion that says, I've never been told no before, so it doesn't make sense that no would be an answer.
Let's make a law. Let's make an industrial rake so that the mayor doesn't cut his foot when he's on the beach, right, or the Shailen doesn't get a flat tire.
That's right. Meryl Sikorsky joining us this morning on the Kenai Conversation, talking all about the Caring for the Kenai Project, now into its 29th year here on the Kenai Peninsula. 283-8414 is the number if you'd like to jump in on the conversation. Again, 283-8414. And we've been talking a lot about sort of broadly how the program has evolved over the years and the different partnerships and how the ideas have changed and some of the focus areas. I'm really curious, because this project goes back far enough, My sense is that you might be able to draw kind of a line in the sand almost of sort of projects pre-internet and projects post-internet. I don't know how true that might be, but it seems like that's access to that much information would have been a pretty healthy change for how this project gets off the ground and the sorts of ideas that are generated and the complexity maybe of those ideas.
Exactly, and we have, with a lot of help from the community and people that work with the program, been able to stay kind of on the cutting edge of technology to where today we're paperless. All the judging is done on laptops and the scoring, and that used to all be done by hand, yellow pads and fax machines.
And you webcast this, don't we?
It's live.
Yeah.
We've had responses from Colombia, Japan, all over the world, so they can see. And I would really encourage, maybe this is a good place to put the plug in, but if people think that Sikorsky is just a passionate, excited hippie, which I won't deny.
I was going to say, is that an untrue statement?
No, but the truth is, everybody should get excited about our kids. When we have a state championship basketball game or football game, thousands of people crowd in to see them get their knees smashed and their shoulders separated for a plastic trophy that they can hold up and say, we're state champs. Okay, these kids are competing for close to $30,000 in cash awards that will go into their pockets and into the classrooms that they are learning all this neat stuff from. And if I get 50 or 80 people to come to the little theater to see these kids, their imaginations and their oral presentations, that's about an average. Okay? When, in my opinion, we should have to have the Renee C. Henderson Auditorium packed to the hilt because we don't have enough seats for people who want to see the thoughts that our kids are having. These thoughts, and I'm not downgrading sports because I think they're important for learning life skills, but these kids are thinking. And when they go on with their thoughts, and when their thoughts become legislation or become apps or become magnetic rakes, to see these kids and how they are working together, to me, is far more exciting than any football game that I know exactly what's going to happen. They line up, they hit, they pass the ball, they kick the ball, they throw the ball, they dunk the ball. Okay? This is going to be, in 29 years, I've never seen two ideas the same, or two presentations. We've had live ponies, I better not say that, on stage. they may shut us down. We've had earthquake simulations where all of a sudden the judge's table starts shaking, like it's a real earthquake. The kids' imagination, and I do encourage the kids to use their imagination. and then to follow through with that. Because, Shailen, I think our imagination and the potential that we can imagine things is why it's not just a Dick Tracy cartoon anymore. I've got one on my wrist, the watch, and it does far more than the Dick Tracy cartoon ever imagined. But somebody imagined it, and now it's reality.
That's right. Again, Meryl Sikorsky joining us this morning on the Kenai Conversation, the facilitator of the Caring for the Kenai Project, now in its 29th year. 283-8414 is the number if you'd like to get in on the conversation this morning. Again, 283-8414. And Meryl, we're talking about all these ideas, and something that strikes me as interesting about it and is the idea that in a very literal sense, this is kind of a marketplace of ideas. And I mean a literal sense in that the best idea is rewarded financially. That's something that's kind of unique, especially, I think, in this day and age when we talk about the internet and social media and everyone having a platform. I think a lot of times ideas are thrown out there and they're given equal weight without necessarily being examined. This is an occasion where ideas can really be analyzed and examined and applied to the real world to see what is the best idea. That's something I think that is pretty unique.
Well, and it's taken me a long time to figure this out, but a few years ago, I finally came up with it. We call the process judging. You know, we say these are our judges who select the 12, and the oral presentation is 8 or 9 different judges from the community. But what you just said is exactly what it took me a long time to learn, is we're not judging these kids. We're not saying this idea is better than that idea. We're doing what Alaskans have done for a very long time, is we're prospecting for gold. Now, the value of the gold is our kids' minds, okay? And now I instruct our judges, I want you to be the best prospector. I don't want you to, you know, don't look on your neighbors because he's going to score it differently. But you find the best nugget for our future, and you score that accordingly, you know, just, you know, like where you're going to go with your gold pan. But that's what we're doing in this program. And in order for the kids to let the judges know that their idea is better than somebody else's, they have to develop all these other oral presentation skills, eye contact. And, you know, you mentioned technology and how we've evolved. Well, unfortunately, we're losing eye contact because it's all about our thumbs and looking down. We can be sitting next to someone laughing and because we're texting, but we've never, you know, seen any body language. And yet in that interview, as we started talking about, that's going to determine whether you get the job or not, it's that very unspoken, non-verbalized communication skill that the kids learn from taking their ideas to a level of implementation.
We were talking earlier, I should say, I asked the question earlier, what are some things that lend them, or some characteristics that lend themselves to a winning idea? And maybe it's not even necessarily the idea itself, but given that this is a competition, the ability of a student to sort of sell that idea, maybe that's kind of an important part. And again, that gets back to the communication aspect.
It is, and it doesn't have to be your idea. It's not curriculum where you have to do your own work. As a matter of fact, we go back to Ali Ostrander, who didn't have an idea, but simply went off, I like to run, okay? And so if you find something you like to do, and then somebody gives you an idea, well, you know, Uncle Fred had an idea of a water skimmer back in the day, and here's how it works. Well, do you think we could make a model of that? And they do. And they bring it in. But it's that whole collaborative thing of, I don't know what to do. I got to do this assignment. And then the kid learns to listen and then collaborate, work with, build on one idea, builds on another. And pretty soon you've got, you know, the borough mayor down there helping you, whether it's the whole idea of recapturing the gas at the landfill. I first heard about that with the Caring for the Kenai idea.
Mm-hmm. Are you, I guess I don't want to, I'm trying to figure out what the proper word would be, not necessarily more impressed, but I guess what are your thoughts on those projects that don't necessarily win in a given year, but have a life after the competition? Because I'm sure there are plenty of examples that you could point to where, you know, a third or a fourth place idea went on to have legs of its own, whereas the winning idea, great idea though it might have been, for whatever reason, maybe kind of sputtered out. And the beach rake is a prime example of that. Are there other examples of good ideas that maybe didn't win the competition, but then did go on to have kind of a life of their own?
There are quite a few, and I think the key to that is when we opened up our community comment and got our volunteers to come in from the community to read the ideas and then add to the thing about, you know, maybe if you thought through this a little bit more, or if you talked to Dan over at OEM, he could give you some help with this, and then re-enter next year. That was the beginning of the community comment thing. And now that it's able to be open before we close the contest electronically, and the students are all anonymous. Okay, so you're only dealing with an idea. But maybe it's city manager Stephanie Queen, and she reads an essay and she says, you know, I really like this. You might want to talk to this person who could help you implement it. The kids can then go out and do that and come back in. And or if they don't make it to the top 12, because 12 out of 400 is a pretty slow, you know, pretty low percentile
right.
of those who go on with the presentation. But a lot of them that have never even made it to the top 12, as example, as I was speaking earlier, you know, the guy who was checking me out at the grocery still uses his idea and has implemented it in his own home. So I think that the value is not just the 12, but any kid who gets the assignment and then has to complete it. Now you learn all this technical stuff and going online, and how do you turn an entry into a PDF, and how do I cut my supplement and get it included? This is that era. You need to know the technology. That's why I need people to implement that part of the program, because I am not of that generation. But these kids need to be. They're not just writing on a typewriter and sending faxes anymore. They need to know how to work the apps, how to Google, how to get all the information, and then how to turn it into their idea that they own and maybe build a business out of it.
And that's what we were talking about that a bit earlier, is this idea that once the internet comes along, that, again, I don't know if it was a fundamental shift in how the projects are developed and sort of analyzed, but it had to have played a massive role in how those projects are developed and how the ideas are developed.
Well, it does. Let's go back to the magnet, okay?
Right.
It was a rake with one little magnet. Does it have industrial applications? Riley pulls out his cell phone, you know, hits a few thumb things. Yeah, here's one.
Just okay. Like that.
Just like that, his idea morphed into what he could do by raking metal out of the beach with he and his brother, to the city now having a magnetic rake that took well over 1,000 pounds of rusty nails and spikes out of our beach.
You know, I'm, again, Merrill Sikorsky, joining us this morning on the Kenai Conversation. A few minutes left here in the program. 283-8414 is the number if you'd like to get in on the talk this morning. 283-8414. You know, getting back into the classroom aspect of this, how has that grown over the years? I mean, in straight financial terms, how has that grown over the years?
Well, it's become cross-curricular. Because it involves language arts with science. And the first we learned about this was when the Homer language arts teacher went in to see the science teacher and say, excuse me, but I've got high school freshmen coming in here asking me how to do a research paper, and they don't even need to do that until next year. What's going on? They said, well, they've got to put their idea down to enter the Caring for the Kenai, which I assign in Biology 101. And she said, well, why don't we just collaborate? Why don't we make this a cross assignment? I'll work with the kids on their essays. You work with the science and helping them develop the technology for the idea. So it became cross-curricular, which, you know, took, for a teacher to have to teach a kid and get them passionate about a research paper is pretty tough. You know, it's not something that you like to learn about because it takes work. Granted, the internet really helps now.
Sure.
But the thing that language arts is still important and always will be, to get that essay and to communicate your idea in a written verbal language is part of our whole education process. That's very important.
Now, for you as facilitator, as you call yourself for this project, you know, over the years, getting out into the broader economy of Alaska, you know, it's a up and down, ebb and flow kind of economy here. And that certainly is true. And it's obviously true in the oil industry. Over the years, for you to facilitate this, has it been a challenge to get buy-in from industry and to keep that support? Has that been a challenge over the years as things go up and down and we just have the natural sort of way of the economic world in Alaska?
Well, we finally picked up the challenge here a couple of years ago. caring for the Kenai was kind of all-consuming. We don't have a big demographic here to have a PR firm with the type of staff that it takes, you know, to do this kind of program. So I didn't put a lot of effort into it until a couple of years ago. And then the idea came from Charlie Gibson, who, when we were on Good Morning America, asked, does this have application elsewhere in America? And my reply was, well, sure, if you've got a backyard, you've got water and sewer and trees, and so wherever your backyard was. Caring for the Kenai works really well as a title here on the peninsula. But you can't go to Nome and have a Caring for the Kenai.
Right.
Have it make any sense. So all of a sudden, the little light bulb went on, and I thought, okay, let's call it Caring for My Backyard. So a couple of years ago, we licensed Caring for My Backyard, and now we do have interest from other industries down in Juneau, the mining industry. The North Slope is starting to see Caring for My Backyard in this curriculum as something that can bridge the cultures of Native culture that we very much want to sustain and maintain with the idea of development and resource extraction. Kids coming up with ideas, how can we fish better? How can we slice the whale better? So we are in the process of moving along with that, but anything takes time. And getting back to this community and why I feel a responsibility to be sure that Caring for the Kenai always goes on into perpetuity is because the community built this. Now, you need that community involvement, and that takes some time. You can get a superintendent online because we're going to bring money into the classroom. We can get teachers online. But to get the community involvement, that takes time.
Is that something you mentioned? The idea as a similar program expands to other areas of the state, the idea of tying culture into it. Is that something that you've seen here a lot in Caring for the Kenai? Is that something that's grown over the years? Is sort of a reflection of or a kind of a shout out to the cultural roots here as part of Caring for the Kenai?
Absolutely. We've had some Kenaitse entries in the past that have made it to the finals, and some of my favorite ones, and I think they're still going on. But before all this technology, the Dena'ina used to watch the birds, and I forget what type of sparrow it was, but these young girls had learned the story from the storytellers of the culture and how when the bird comes, they know the fish are coming, and turn that into science that actually our biologists were starting to look at. So you were not only preserving the cultural heritage of the old way of watching for things, but maybe there's some science there. Maybe those birds really do have a way of knowing when and where the fish are coming from. So while, yeah, that is preserving the ancient ways, it moves right into the modern technology of today, and that's the very bridge that I hope we'll create. And not only for Alaska, but you know, elsewhere in the country where we have these same issues, that we want everybody to come up with an idea of what can I do to preserve these things, whether it's language or whether it's culture. What can I do?
You know, we've got and just a few moments left here in the program. Again, Meryl Sikorski joining us this morning on the Kenai Conversation. I'm curious, we've talked about a lot of these projects that have been submitted over the years. I just wanted to, in the last couple of minutes, did we miss any that are particularly noteworthy from nearly three decades?
Oh, my goodness. Aren't you glad I brought a list? Okay, do you remember The Rock, the Kenai?
Yes.
Okay, that was Courtney Stroh's idea.
Yep.
Respect our community.
That's right, that's right.
And she took the kids out there, and when the dip netters came down here and were leaving their guts and the stuff all over the place, she was teaching them. Okay, she didn't win the contest, but Rock the Kenai won, you know, all kinds of other awards. Kiara Stroh came up with the Scanning the Salmon app. That was her sister, and she did. She was a first-place winner. And my list only has the first-place winners here. In 2011, Kelsey Leaf, the title of her project was The Gift of Green, but she was really disturbed when Walmart came in and clear-cut all those trees.
Sure.
And so she got together a volunteer program and went out and reforested, I don't know, 2,000-3,000, you know, some trees. Let me get back into the more modern history. We had Patrick Bennett. This is back in 1996, and he created an environmental website that won him a President's Environmental Youth Award. Senator Stevens at that time was head of Appropriations Committee, and he went on to meet the President of the United States at a White House reception. We've had six of our kids do that. Oh, let's see here. There, speaking of music, in 1998, there was a kid by the name of Ariana Sikorski who wrote a theme song that later went on to be recorded and actually went on health fairs in the Soviet Union and was duplicated, I guess, something like 500,000 different times.
Wow.
Over there. On her, so that was the hardest year.
Because I can imagine.
I can work with kids, but your own kids?
That's a different, yeah.
Dad. Michael Penland, Eric Soderquist, and Paul Kim, the boardwalk, before the ice flow came, they went down there and built seating places where people could sit and watch the river. They won a President's Environmental Youth Award. Per Harkvidson had a filtration system for outboard motors that each person could use to keep the runoff from their fishing boats going into the Kenai River.
This is a prime example of the wide range of ideas and their application that has been shown over the last 30 years. It's pretty impressive.
Absolutely. Oh, here's one. Merritt Hartfordson, Slycott Creek platform. That's an aluminum platform that exists down there today. She was a stream watch at Kalifonsky School. They went down and they would take the water measurements. So when she got to be a freshman, she realized that what the kids were doing were trampling the banks of the beach, eroding the river, and they were about to stop the stream watch program, which is a great program. So she created, along with Mike's Welding, an aluminum platform elevated over the creek where the kids could come down. And I remember Dale Bagley was borough mayor at that time, and he was carrying down these big aluminum grates, you know, and the community got together and we built that for a minimal cost, to where if the borough had gone to do that, they, you know, would have been asking for a $200-$300 appropriation somewhere. Sure. And it never would have happened.
Yeah. Well, we got in just the final, not quite a minute here, what's coming up for this? I know next month is the big finale, right?
Absolutely. I believe it's either the 17th or the 18th. It's the third Thursday. It's always the Thursday before Earth Day. Over at the Little Theater, you will see this year's top 12 ideas. We keep the kids anonymous through all the judging process so that we don't have any bias or perception of bias, because Homer knocked the snacks off so high on the skating rink or the football, you know, any of that. The kids are totally anonymous to the judges until after we have the final scores tabulated and we announce the school, the teacher, and the student by name.
Merrill, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for caring for the Kenai.